Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
All right, now that everybody's got their little handy dandy, or getting their little handy dandy journals, I'll explain more in just a minute. Before I do, I want to jump in and acknowledge in all of our campuses, they're getting these. A couple of things, you know, I know a lot of folks are back to your normal routines and your houses and all that stuff. There's still a lot of folks in our area and around who are still struggling in the aftermath of Hurricane Florence. And we want you to know that we are still committed and working on supporting the efforts, the recovery efforts that continue in our area. I want to mention some things that are happening. This is actually pretty incredible to be a part of. As you know, Samaritan's Purse is still on our property and all of our campuses around the entire Southeast region, and we are honored to host them. There have been a lot of folks from out of town coming in and being a part of those efforts. I believe there's several hundred people that are staying between all of our campuses with Samaritan's Purse during the week. So we're grateful for their service to our community. But a few things I want to mention, because a lot of folks have been coming in from all over the country to help out and be a part of this. I know in New Bern and in Jacksonville in particular, they've moved out into Jones County where it's been really hard hit and are working in there. Also from here in Leland, we're going into Bergall and places like that working. But I know Motor Racing Outreach and Hendrick Motorsports are on the ground and have sent teams in to help. We've had teams from Liberty University, East Carolina University, Duke sent some teams, just saying. UNC sent some teams as well. I think Duke did more than Chapel Hill did. We've had some organizations, BB&T and Wells Fargo have sent teams. We've had churches, Harvest Church from Riverside, California, Elevation Church from Chicago, The Belonging Church from Nashville, Tennessee. We've had Coastal Christian High School sending a bunch of kids in this coming Wednesday to work and serve. And we've also had about 100 of our students from our overflow ministry here out in the community. So a lot of stuff going on. If you're interested or you're able, or your organization has some volunteer hours or things that you want to contribute, this is a great way to do that. There's still plenty of need. And also, we are in the process of setting up a furniture distribution that a couple of folks from our church have been setting up. And there's information on my social media and on our website, Furniture Finders and House of Provision. If we are still taking furniture, if you have good furniture, you want to donate, that information is there. We would love to take that and be distributing that next week. If you know families, there's a process to go through. We're working with the Harrelson Center and Catholic Charities to make sure that folks can get what they need. They'll come and shop at the furniture store for free, and it's a beautiful thing, and we're super excited to be a part of that. So if you're interested, all that's on our website. We would love for you to participate. Now, I'm going to have a blast. So if y'all are bored, it doesn't bother me one bit. I'm going to like this a lot. I am on a quest, and my quest is not to get you to journal. My quest is to get you to see, and journaling is the most profound way in my life I have ever learned how to see, and so I'm going to commend you and recommend and challenge and whine and all those things to get you to do this, okay? It is that important, and here's why. At the end of this year, most everybody and anybody who's going to support City Church, we're going to tell you to do a personal retreat. You're going to be encouraged to sit down at the end of the year, look at your life over the last year, bring it to a close, say what happened, what was hard, what was good, what was bad, what was right, what was wrong, what happened in my life, and then look to the future and see what it is that you believe is next, what you believe God wants for you next, how he's going to work in your life. We pick words and all that kind of good stuff. And every year we have, I don't know, several hundred people that will email back in and tell me that they did the personal retreat and it was life-changing for them. It happens every year. And most people, you know, kind of, did it, whatever, but that's fine. I get it. I'm going to keep doing this. You're just going to have to stop coming to church before I stop. So, but here's the difference. What we're doing is, these planners were designed to be 90 days, or 90 days. And I was going to start it on September the 30th, which was 90 days from the end of the year, except we had a hurricane, so now you got about 70-something days. But it'll still do the same thing. Because here's what's going to happen. If you do this, if you follow along from now until the end of this year, if you follow along even halfway, if you moderately participate in this, You will sit down at your personal retreat and you will have real information about what you are thinking and seeing and believing and struggling with that will give you insight into your life, what has happened, and insight into what might happen or could happen that you cannot even imagine. The only thing, if you don't do this, is on December 31st, when you sit down to your personal retreat, is you will regret not having this information. Is that good enough guilt trip for you? I'm telling you that if you do this, it will change your life. I've been toying with this for the better part of 2 years, and over the last year specifically with this exact format that we're going to learn together. We're going to get feedback and we're going to learn together how to do this. If you notice, if you open it up, it's got some instructions in the front. I know some of folks have said, man, our books start on page 9. If your book starts on page 9, turn it back in, we'll give you another one. It's supposed to start on page 1. And if you open it up, you'll notice that all the blanks for where the days of the week are all empty and they're blank. There are reasons for that. It's not a misprint. I'm going to explain that to you as we go along. So this is what we're going to be doing. So if you don't like what I'm talking about, you brought a pen, you can draw. I hope you'll follow along, because what we're talking about is this idea of being rushed and how we learn to walk in a way. We've talked about this, that there is a way of life, a pace of life that is driven by pressure. There's a pace of life that is driven by pressure, and it is the pressure that you put on yourself. It's the pressure that other people put on you. It's the pressure to prove yourself or the pressure to please others. Whatever it is, it's some pace that you've established in your life because of what you feel like you need to prove to the world around you, or because of what you feel like other people expect of you. And that's largely how most human beings in the Western culture, in our area, in our culture live today. And we said that the pace that you live at is the speed or the pace of expectations. And we spent the last couple of weeks talking about this, the pace of expectations, what everybody else expects of you, what you expect of yourself, and it just gets faster and faster and faster and faster. My premise has been that this, and I think all of us would acknowledge, this is really no way to live. The pace at which most of us operate is not sustainable over the long haul. And the only thing that actually happens to slow us down is usually some kind of, you know, like a hurricane slows everybody down because you can't go to work, or some health crisis. Most people I talk to, those are the two reasons they slow down. The reason they slow down is because something happened to them. My question, is there a better way to live? What we've been talking about is there's actually a pace of life, a way of life that has been designed and created. We've actually been intended, and if you are like me, I love nature. I love looking at how things are organized and created in that sense. And what you see fundamentally in nature is this idea of rhythms, of starts and stops, our heart beats, the fact that we have seasons, we have days, we have nights, we have all these things that say there are starts and stops, there are rhythms to everything. In our culture, it's like a badge of honor. I'm a 24/7 person. I'm a 24/7 guy, 24/7 gal. I talk to pastors who that's like their badge of honor. I'm like 24/7. I'm like, you realize that's unbiblical, because even God has asked you to take a day off. At some point, we've got to stop thinking it's heroic to run at red line all the time and understand how is it that you have been designed to live. You're going to live better at the pace in which you were designed than any effort you're going to put in anything else. This is what has been made available to us. And what this happens when we talk about this is this runs at the pace or the speed of a relationship. And a lot of us don't understand this because we don't live at the speed of relationship in any of our lives, including our relationships. A lot of our relationships are designed to meet expectations that we felt were placed on us or that we had for ourselves. We network in the business world. We use our families as our resume. Whatever it is to kind of buttress this expectation we have of ourselves is what we do. And we miss the very idea of what it means to relate, to live in a relationship with one another, let alone a relationship with God. And what ends up happening is we end up looking for principles that we can mine from, apply to our lives in order to meet the expectations that we have for ourselves or other people have for us. And that tends to be the way that we live. And the odds are that that's going to be continuing over the next weeks, months, and years of your life unless something happens to you or unless you decide to do something about it. The goal in this series isn't just to reduce your pace for the sake of going leisure and casual is better than frantic. There are times and seasons in our lives where you're going to have to run at the red line. There's no question. There are seasons that are more demanding than others, and there are things that we are called to do, we are gifted to do, and we should be about. Our hands should be put to work to do some of those things. Those are important things. I'm not suggesting that they're not. I'm just saying chronic redlining is going to harm you. It will hurt you physically. It will crush your soul, and you will miss the very life that you want and have in fact been intended to live. And that's my premise in this. That's why I'm driving this so hard, why I believe in this. I love what G.K. Chesterton says, because Jesus has called us into a way of life. If you read the Bible and the Gospels and you begin to understand what God has fundamentally created us for, he has called us into a way of life. He's called us into a way of life. And so what G.K. Chesterton said, he lived in England a century ago, and he said, the Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and left untried. The way in which Jesus invited us to live doesn't leave you without. It will fill you, it will surely fill you. It's his promise. It will free you, it's his promise. The problem is we look at it, we don't know how to do it. And so we do what we do with a lot of things we don't know how to do, especially as adults. We don't know how to do things as adults. We don't learn them. We just figure we're not cut out for them, and then we stop. And that's what happens to a lot of people. Just give me the principle, give me the idea, help me to apply it in my life, and I'll be good. And what Jesus has said, and we've looked at this the last few weeks, in Matthew chapter 11, it says this, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." It's interesting to me that what Jesus invites us to do is he invites us to link up with him. I've talked to people after reading this passage, so we've heard this. Jesus says, "Take my yoke upon you." And it feels like he's taken the yoke and he's dropped it on your head. That's not what he says. He says, "I want you to take my yoke and I want you to walk with me and I want you to learn from me." I heard that said this past week. I was listening to a guy talk and he said, it's interesting that when Jesus was going to teach us his way, he didn't give us information. He gave us a tool. He gave us the yoke. He said, "I want you to take my yoke upon you. My yoke is easy. My burden is light." That's how it finishes up. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. And so we hear this and we see this and we go, well, okay, so how do we do this? Well, that's the question, how do we do this? I want to borrow, right here, can I borrow you for a second? Is that cool? What's your name?
Brandon.
Yeah, Brandon. Mike, nice to meet you, man. Thank you for coming up here. You're pretty strong there. All right, so here's a piece of wood.
Yeah.
All right, how old are you, can I ask?
19.
You're 19. Are you in school?
No,
just hanging out. Oh, do you really? Oh, this is not going to be Goody Frames Houses. So I want you to take this nail, and I want you to drive it into this piece of wood.
My fingers?
Well, how would you do it?
A hammer?
Right, exactly. Right. I'm not going to let you do it because you might hit me with it. It's a hammer. So that's all I needed from you, Brandon. You don't even have to actually do this. Thank you so much. That was a piece of cake, wasn't it? Thank you, Brandon. Give Brandon a hand. That was awesome. Now, that's the first question he asked me when I handed him this hammer, this nail and this piece of wood. And I said, "I want you to drive this in there." He said, "Dummy, you need a tool, right? You need a tool. You need something that you can use to make this thing happen." Now, I can't hit it like you did, but you get the idea. It'd take me like a year to frame a house. So my point is, people ask me all the time, so Mike, you know, I hear you talk about journaling, and I don't know that journaling's in the Bible, and can you say that journaling is biblical? I'm like, well, besides the fact that God chose to write everything he did down, that's my snarky answer. I'm not suggesting that this is a biblical mandate that you should keep a journal. All I'm suggesting is that trying to walk with God without some mechanism to see is like trying to put a nail in a piece of wood without a hammer. You need a tool, and so all I'm offering you is a tool, a way that will help you see. This has been about a 2-year journey chronicling this over the years to try and understand. I've been journaling for about, since I was 15 or 16 years old. And lest you think that it's profound and beautiful and publishable, it is not. My will is that my journals are to be burned with me at my death because I do not want anyone to really know how crazy I really am. I use lots of code. There are lots of code. I have various sin patterns I've struggled with over years. They get assigned different codes from fire trucks to rats to all kinds of other things that no one on the planet knows what they are except for me and God. Why? Because I'm more interested in what I see than I see. And you've got to get this part, because this is one of the hardest things about it, especially in the world of blogs and Twitter and Instagram, where everything has to be so perfect. This is a place where you can be anything but. And what I've been able to do, and so I started this format, and yours are bound differently so you can write across. I had to bind these. I made them myself. And what I did is I opened them up, and I started this for two reasons. One is it allowed for me to have to do something with what was in front of me, and it gave me a finite amount of space in which to process or think or do whatever. That was my goal, because my goal is, if you're here and you have a rocking system for your walk with God, you don't need to worry about this. For the 98% of the rest of you, this will probably be a tool that you might find helpful. And I know some of you are going, well, man, I don't like journaling. Well, call it something else. Call it chronicling your life, or I call it thinking. I think thinking, I've had people say, well, Mike, I don't journal because I just don't have time. I said, well, I think thinking is pretty important. And if more people thought, just saying. So what I do, and I want to walk with you through why this is so important, because what I've been able to do is they're 90-day blocks, and this was the first 90 days, and I started this back in December with this format, and every day, Monday through Sunday, I would do this, and I would set them up, and I did it, and I look back over these were 270 days, and I can see I have never been more consistent. I've never had more clarity in sensing and seeing what God is doing in my life than I have in the last year using this. So I'm going to try to give this to you, encourage you to use it, and then see how it might be helpful in your life. Now, what happens to us, and this is why this is so important, I'm going to give you some principles, some things that I've stumbled upon that are helpful to me that I hope will be helpful to you. But what I want you to understand is I'm not talking about principles to live by. I'm talking about a way of life. That what most of us, we've got to get this, because you can understand principles and miss the whole point. For example, you can decide that a relationship with your wife is really important. And what you wind up thinking is you go, my wife is so frustrated with me because we don't connect. She's so frustrated with me because I don't make enough time. She's so frustrated with me because our relationship or whatever this looks like is. And so, Mike, what's a principle I can help with? Okay, well, here's a principle that I learned when I was newly married. It's like they called it couch time. And couch time is basically when you come home from work, and instead of like going and doing all the stuff you're supposed to do and kissing the kids, you just sit down on the couch with your wife for 5 minutes. 5 minutes of couch. I'm going to sit with you. You're going to sit with me. I'm going to ask you about your day. You're going to tell me about your day. And then we can go do all the other stuff. But for 5 minutes, you're going to have my undivided attention. It's a simple principle to help you connect with your wife. The problem is what a lot of us are going, I need to connect with my wife so that she's not mad at me. Do you see the difference? I'm not wanting to connect with my wife. I'm wanting to connect with my wife so that she's not mad with me. And I need a principle to help alleviate that. And couch time does it. Oh, there's the principal. I come home, sit down 5 minutes, you start your timer. And she's telling you, and then like, ding, 5 minutes, she goes, like, oh, done, can you get me some tea? How do you think that goes over? Right, you've applied the principle perfectly and missed the entire point. What I'm asking you to do is not to go, I journaled 8 times, I read my Bible 5 times, I did this. I'm not asking you to go, I did all this. I'm asking you to learn to see. I'm inviting you to use this tool to help you see your own heart, your own soul, in light of who God is, to learn and see and discover who God is, and to learn this as we go. Are there things that we need to understand? Yes. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 7 and 8 says this. It says, have nothing to do with irreverent, silly myths. And the modern vernacular of this, because this is basically all the stuff that everybody was talking about all the time, have nothing to do with these irreverent, silly myths. What we might want to say to modernize it is say, have nothing to do with all the blogs and tweets and pundits and all the noise that we hear most of the time, most of the places that we are. Have nothing to do with those things. Rather, look at these next 5 words. Rather, train yourself for godliness. It's a really interesting phrase. Do you know what the most important word in those last 5 words would be? Train. Rather, train yourself for God. So most people go, I'm going to try to be better. I'm going to try to do better. I'm going to try to read my Bible. I'm going to try to do my quiet time. I'm going to try to journal. I'm going to try. Trying is no good. Go try to run a marathon today. Just go try to do it. You'll get like 3 minutes in and you're going to die. Most of you. Some of you are like obsessive compulsive marathon people. You're like, oh, I got this. The rest of us, right, you can't do it. Trying isn't going to help you. You have to train. You have to start with what you can do in order to do something else later. And it's going to push you a little bit. It's going to stretch you a little bit, but you're going to push and push until before you'll be able to do something you could not do before. And it may only be 1 mile to start. And then it may be 5 miles. And then it may be a little bit longer, a little bit longer, but you're going to have to train yourself. The same thing is true. This is exactly what he says. Rather, train yourself for godliness. And he goes on, he says this. For while bodily training, running marathons, it's of some value. It has a place. But godliness has value in every way. There's nothing more important than who you are becoming. There's nothing more important. You're going to make decisions. You're going to have things happen to you in relationships that matter to you. You're going to have things that happen to you in your vocation, in your call, in your education that matter to you deeply. And you're going to respond to them and react to them based on circumstances and based on pace and based on some vision of something. And I want it to be based on who you are and who you've been made to be. And I think this will help you to do that. Finish that verse. He says that godliness is of value in every way as it holds promise for this present life and the life to come. You see, the way of Jesus isn't just about heaven when you die. It's the way of Jesus right here, right now. We have to train ourselves in it. Now, I recognize we can't go back and wear robes and sandals and walk on dirt roads, nor would I want to. I'm not suggesting that we just model Jesus by trying to pretend that we don't live in a modern world. I'm saying that what are the things that we can do that train ourselves to think like Jesus and walk like Jesus and live like Jesus in the way of Jesus, to take his yoke and to set our lives in order to learn from him. I struggle with this as a college student primarily, because in college they brainwash you essentially, no matter what major you're in, to make you think that you're doing the most important work of any. You could have been this major, but thank God you're not, because you're doing the most noble work. Of at least that's how they taught us as architects. We were master craftsmen, and you're the elite. And they brag about how many freshmen don't make it, right? They do all that, so they make you feel like you're the elite. And you sort of get in this pressure and this expectation, all this stuff, and you get into this. I remember in college wrestling with this in my walk with Christ and trying to balance all these different voices that I was feeling. And in Psalm 119, verse 5, I remember coming across this, and I wrote it down. It's been one of my mantras ever since. And it says this, that, oh, that my ways would be established in order to keep your statutes. Oh, that my ways would be established to keep your statutes. And I underlined it. Then I remember thinking about this. The implication of this, if my ways are to be established in order to keep his word, to keep his commands, to do what he asks, it must mean that my life can be arranged in a way in which those things are not likely to happen. There's a way in which our lives are arranged that walking with God and listening to God and hearing from God and following him are not likely to happen. So I have to arrange my life in order to keep his word. That means there are things that I can do, and there's a lot of latitude given. He doesn't say you have to journal or you have to read or you have to draw. He doesn't say any of those things. He just says you've got to arrange your life. And here's what I want you to understand. Your results that you are getting in your life currently, the results that you're getting relationally, the results that you're getting in your pace, the results you're getting with how well you are bringing yourself to the situation, the results that you are getting are a direct result of the way your life is currently arranged. Your life is currently arranged to get the results you are currently getting. And if you don't like them, guess what? What you're probably going to do is regret it, complain about it, I wish things were different, but if you don't arrange your life any differently, you are going to continue to get the same results. What most people do, and this may not be in this crowd, it may have been in the early service, right? But most people, the fear of doing something different and not knowing how to do it is paralyzing, especially the older we get. And I mean old, I don't mean like 80 or 90, I mean like 25. The older you get, the more afraid you are of change. And what most people would rather have, familiar misery than uncertain hope. who would rather do what we've always been. This is what most people do. They come and they feel good. They say, I promise I'll do this. And they don't do it. And they go right back to the way that they have always been. They go right back to the patterns. And your arrangement is perfectly designed to get the results that you're getting right now. That's why you're getting them. And most people believe that they don't have any say or choice in the matter. And what I'm telling you is that you do. You get a say in who you become. You get a say in how you live your life. And what he has said in this passage here is that we have to arrange our lives in order to keep his word. And you have to do that work. And one of the most fundamental ways I know to arrange my life is to look at where I spend my time, where I spend my thinking, and how I use those two things. It's critical. So here's where all this kind of goes to and from. There are two things that this planner will do. And this is very important because some people have already asked me, they said, Mike, you know, I want to use this, but can I get it a digital copy of it? There are two people, we've been doing this with our staff for about a year and experimenting in some really informal ways, but there are two people on our staff who are exceedingly disciplined. Exceedingly disciplined. They did 90 days in paper, and when they showed me they did it for 90 days, I gave them a digital copy, and they use it on an iPad with an Apple Pencil. And they, so if you do it for 90 days, you can convince me that you're like disciplined. I'll give you a digital copy. Otherwise, you'll scan it, put it in your computer, and do it anyway. I get that. But here's why it's designed this way. There are two important principles behind this. There are more, but there are two I want to highlight. Principle number one is the idea of digital disruption. It's that most of the information that we get comes at us at lightning speed, and it comes at us in an avalanche of information. It's on Twitter, it's on blogs, it's the news, it's people yelling at each other, it's all this stuff, and it is just a constant barrage of information, and it is hyper-stimulating imagery. Everything is fly. Everything is fast and flash and quick. In fact, if you want to do this, just go back and watch a movie from like the 1980s. If you've done this recently, go back and watch a movie from like the 1980s. You're going, oh my, can you come on already? It just seems so slow. And I love the 80s. It seems so slow because we've gotten so accustomed to how fast stuff happens. Everything is quick and imagery and fast. And what we need to do is we need to disrupt that. You need for some way to pull back and not have to deal with a barrage. And instead, because what it is, all that is input, all that is coming at us, all that is coming into us, and what this disruption allows is for you to consider what input you give to the world and not simply what input you get from the world. What are you doing? What is your contribution? What are you pushing back with? And most of us don't have any space to think about that or consider it, and you just wind up in these patterns. Do you realize that our brain actually needs this? And I could spend 10 hours talking about this to you. I'm not going to, so you can relax. But I'm telling you, like, think about this. The reason that you lose your keys is because you did not put them where you always put them. That's why you lose them. Do you know why? Because your brain has stopped thinking about it. You come home, you put your keys here, you go do this there, and then the next time you don't even remember driving home because your brain did it for you. You didn't have to think about it. And we do this. The more things, and I had a psychiatrist friend of mine who helped me this years ago. He said, Mike, he said, one of the things that you need to be really careful of is not getting your brain stuck. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, don't sit in the same place in your house every night. Because you know what happens, right? You come home, put your keys in the same place, you sit in your chair, and eventually your kids go, Dad's chair. You have your own chair, you have your own, you know, your own groove, you have your own place, you put this, your own place, and all of a sudden you just stop thinking about any of those things. Your brain just goes to sleep, and it doesn't engage in anything because it's just on automatic pilot the whole time. And so he says, when you come home, don't sit in the same chair, sit somewhere differently. If nothing else, your kids will go, why is Dad sitting over there? And that's a whole lot of fun. But the problem is the more you do this, because what you have to do is I said, what else can I do to help this? He said, brush your teeth with your opposite hand. Do this when you're in a hurry. You're like, oh, and your hand doesn't work. You're like trying to do, because you're disrupting what you do automatically. And if I ask you to cross your arms, everybody does this. If I ask you to cross them the other way, you're like, oh, I can't remember which arm I cross with, because your brain does stuff automatically and it stops thinking. Do you know what happens when you hear information over and over and over and over again that becomes so familiar, like your favorite seat? Your brain stops thinking about it. Your brain stops thinking about it. And you go on autopilot. You don't have relationships on autopilot. You don't see people on autopilot. You don't do that on autopilot. You don't feel your soul on autopilot. I believe that thinking about things is extraordinarily important. It's one of the great gifts that God has given to human beings. And that brings me to the second reason this planner and its format is so important. Number two is the concept of creative choice. When you were in kindergarten, they gave you a blank sheet of paper and an 8-pack of colored crayons. And your only fear was like, man, I wish they'd give me 64 crayons. You love that because you would pull out whatever. You didn't think, you just pull out and you just start drawing and making stuff. And it was so much fun. It was so cool. Until like in first grade, someone said, you don't draw as good as Josh. You're not an artist. You're terrible at it. You should never draw again. You need to learn spreadsheets. And you spend the rest of your life doing that. And you lose this sense. You lose this place inside of you that was designed. I mean, you think about it. We are made in the image of God. You know what the first thing he did? He created. Out of chaos, he created something. Y'all, I'm not suggesting that everybody become artists. I'm not an artist. I don't consider myself an artist. What I have learned, though, is the importance of creative choice. To get your kids to eat vegetables requires creative thinking. To avoid traffic in all of our crazy cities requires creative thinking. To lead the businesses that you lead, to solve the problems that we are going to have to solve, require creative thinking. We cannot afford to be stuck, especially as the people of God who have been given the keys to the kingdom. We cannot afford to be stuck. And if you don't do something, I can guarantee you, you will get stuck. It's just what happens to humans. You probably know people like this. Some of you may be married to people like this, and you know what that's like. I'm just kidding. So you get the idea. Creative choice. What this does is this forces you. There's nothing in here. You know what it's like to look at a blank page as an adult, right? You hate this. Every time I'm starting a series, I have a whiteboard in my office and I wipe the whole board clean. And I get my marker out and I look at it and go, what's the first word I'm going to put up there? Right? God said, let there be light, and everything exploded. This has to be the most profound thing I've ever written or said or done in my life. And all the fear of not being right or not being correct or not being creative creeps in. And I realize that I can write my name up there and I can erase it and nobody even knows. And that fear of blank space comes back. And what you need is something familiar. And so what I've done is you have blank blocks here. And all you have to do in the top, what you know for sure, is that what creative choice does is it takes blank space and it uses it for something. And you've got two places up here. You've got a place that you can write the month, and you've got a place that you can write your one word if you've picked one. So you know what the month is, right? October. So tomorrow or tonight when you're setting this up, you get your marker out and you write, I don't even know where my marker went, here it is, and you write October. And you're like, oh, I created something, I made something. And you know what else is in here that's kind of interesting? That you have right here in front of you, you got these little boxes right here, and you know what goes there, right? Tomorrow is what? October the 22nd. And then you put the 23rd. And before you know it, you are taking blank space and you are turning it into something. You are making creative choices, even though they're simple creative choices. If you want to get real creative, you choose a different color marker to read in. When's the last time as an adult you haven't written in blue or black or red, right, when you're marking something up, or a yellow highlighter? When's the last time? Because you're just making a choice. Everything you do, you're disrupting the way that you normally think. You're breaking patterns that need to be broken to see something differently, to arrange your life in order to keep his word. And then what you do with that, once you get that, I put all of my, and I'll show you, I put all of my appointments, that's got stuff in it. All of my appointments, I just write them down. That's Carson's birthday. And I just write them down, and I put them all on here, and I write them in these boxes. All right, and this is what my week looks like. These are the appointments I have. These are who I'm going to meet with. And then what I do is I put my word up here in this corner. My word is produced this year. It started off to be able to like produce journals, produce products. I wanted to produce some things. And then I had a conversation with a friend of mine. He said, I don't like your word. I said, well, you can't do this. My word. And he said, And we talk about, and what it's become about is producing the fruit of the kingdom, which means that when I go into meetings, my job isn't just to get things done. My job is to cultivate soil in which godly fruits of the Spirit can grow. Do you see how different that is when you're going into a meeting and instead of thinking about what you're going to get done, you're thinking about how you're going to cultivate someone else's heart for something that they might need? It doesn't change the agenda of the meeting. It just changes the way you walk in there because you're seeing something differently. How many of you guys picked a word this year and have already forgotten it? Don't raise your hand. I'm just kidding. I know a lot of you did. You know what? If you write your word down every single week, I can guarantee you ain't going to forget it. I can't forget my word. I want to forget my word this year. I can't do it. It's because I've simply written it down. So I write all that down. Then you've got these two big boxes over here on the right-hand side of the page. You got these two boxes. And what I do in these boxes, I've kind of deviated a little bit because I've been doing this for a long time, but what I want to tell you just for simplicity, this is what I would tell you to do. In the top box, you just write stuff to get done. Stuff to get done. It doesn't have to be your to-do list. It can be your to-do list, but just stuff to get done. And this means things that you want to accomplish, things you want to do, hobbies you need to begin, things that you have to get done this week. What about conversations with your kids that matter? How often does that get on your to-do list? How often do the most important relational things get on your calendar? Usually it's an emergency or something has happened. I put these things on here. I know what my kids are doing. I know when I went out with my kids. I know when I've surfed with my kids. I know when I've gotten coffee with my kids. I know when I've done this. I write them down. I know when I've hung out with Julie. I know all these things. I just simply jot it down in here just to go, this is what happened today. Why? Because what I want to see my life. I want to see my life through the lens of what I believe God is doing in me and be able to discover that. So stuff to get done. And the second thing is stuff to discuss with God. Okay, you can like qualify that. Stuff to discuss with God. I'll tell you why I call it stuff to discuss with God and not a prayer list. Because most people think of a prayer list as all the lists of names, everybody who said, hey, can you pray for my aunt? She's, you know, whatever. And I do all that. I have a list. I have people's names in my place where I pray for them. I pray for them every week. So names are important to me. But it's not just that. Sometimes there are ideas I have or thoughts I have or worries about what's happening. Sometimes they're directional things. Sometimes they're relational things. These are things I want to discuss with God. God, I want to talk to you about this. And I can look at them and say, am I talking, am I spending time praying about this? Sometimes what I do is I use this page to write out my prayers. Sometimes I take sermon notes on this page. Sometimes I, you know, write my journal entries on this page. So if you have never kept a journal before, train yourself. Don't go out and buy a 500-page leather, $40 cool wrap-up journal. Use this. It's free, right? It's free. By the way, a good friend of mine donated all the money to print these and pay for these to distribute to all you guys today. So I'm really grateful for his generosity. So my point is this. I had somebody come in this morning and said, I didn't write my journal because I only had a pen and I don't want to mess it up. It's free. It's free. If you mess it up, it's free, right? It's your journal. Don't feel like you have to write 400 pages and it'd be publishable by the time you're done. Just write what you thought. We're going to be using the devotions this week to help you get started. I'm going to show you that in just a minute. Before I go, I want to wrap up here. I could go on and on and on. I want you to get this. I want you to use this. The reason the cover's blank is so you can put your name on it or put your word on it or whatever it is that you're doing with yours and make it yours. It's yours. No one's going to steal it or publish it or think weird things. But I tell people when I look at my discussion with God, I talk to my friends about what I'm talking to God about. I talk about when I'm disappointed with God even. Believe it or not, people think that, you know, they're, so let me tell you why I write things down. And what I would say to you is this, when it comes to the creative thinking, slowing down, whatever, you need to do something. Write poetry, write songs, and some of you are going, I'm not a poet. Well, you had to write poetry in 11th grade. They made you do that. Remember haikus? Remember that goofy stuff we used to have to do? And we go, well, I can't do it. So write one. If you can't do it, that's all the more reason to write one because it discombobulates the way you normally think about things. Write poetry. Sketch something. Well, I can't sketch. Yes, you can. Sketch something. Build something. I'm terrible at building. My older brother got every handyman gene in our family. I got none. So last week, I fixed two Adirondack chairs and I painted them. I hated every minute of it, but it disrupted what I was normally going to do. And I used my hands. It was tactile. I did something different. Read. Because I hate reading. Me too. I read because it's important. I have this book. A friend of mine let me borrow it. It was like 9 years ago. I think it's mine now. I'm not giving it back. But it's Ralph Waldo Emerson. You want to impress people? I'm reading Ralph Waldo Emerson. People are really impressed. I'm not smart enough to read Ralph Waldo Emerson. And that was my first thought. I started reading this and going, oh my gosh, I can't read this. So I just started and I read like one or two pages. And there's a note he wrote me in there and it says this. Mike, lots of good reading here, but start on page 257. Here's an easy place to start because I know you're kind of slow like that. He didn't say that, but that's what he meant. Then he says, the writing has the pace of the 19th century, but once you fall into its stride, you will love it. You know what that means? The pace at which I currently live is not going to match the pace at which I'm going to have to read, so it's going to take me some time to step into this and read it, and it discombobulates my thinking. Then it says, return it at your leisure. Never. So, but you, and I don't do this every day. It's not an everyday discipline. It's a season. When I know that I'm running like this, I need to do this to slow that down. Sometimes when I've been writing or thinking a lot and spending a lot of time in my own head, I need to get out and do other things. Sometimes when I spend a lot of time on the stage, I need to go serve in a place where no one knows who I am. There are disciplines that I have to do in order to walk in the way that Jesus has called me to live, to take his yoke on me. And the reason I found that writing this is so important, and I mean this, and I don't use ballpoint pens. I use felt tip pens. Do you know why? Because I can write fast with a ballpoint. Felt tip pens, you have to write every letter and think about it, and it slows everything down. Here's my four reasons why I write. This is in the front of your books, I think on page 5 or 6. And I want to tell you these because I want you to get this. I want to convince you that if you take 10 minutes a day this week, 5 days, you will be on the path to your life being transformed. I write my thoughts because, number one, it convinces my mind that I'm serious about slowing down. I have to convince myself. I get adrenaline by how fast I can move and get stuff done. That makes me feel important. So writing forces me to go, you're not as important as you think. Slow it down, bucko, and let's think about this. And writing does that. Number two, writing my thoughts allows me to see what I'm thinking without being blinded by what I'm feeling. You ever sent an email that you wish you hadn't sent? Because you wrote it down, you were mad, and you sent it? If you don't know what I'm talking about, I've got a bunch of them I can share with you. I got a lot of them. It's usually at 3:42 in the morning. I look at this going, this person woke up ticked. And rather than writing in their journal, they sent me an email. It's probably a bad decision, but I'm okay with that, right? You need to have a place you can write that's not Twitter or blog or Instagram, where you're writing stuff down to simply sort the emotion that you feel with the things that are going to happen to you. People are going to do things that are going to baffle you. They're going to tick you off. They're going to disappoint you. Your kids, your spouse, everybody's going to do it to you at some point in your life. And if you live your life reacting by the emotion that you feel without really understanding what you think about it, you're going to create a lot of damage in a lot of relationships. I write, and I write with a lot of emotion at times, in order to see what I'm actually thinking, to get to a place where I can go, this is what I really think about this. And then I can usually respond much more measured, much more in a way that is characteristic of who I'm becoming and not just what I feel. So I write for that reason. Number three, it gives me a chance to see and submit my thoughts to God. People think that because you're a pastor, it's easy to believe everything that God says. It's not. I wrestle just like anybody. I ask God, why did you allow this? Why did you say that? Why didn't you allow this? Why is this way? I write those things that I ask questions in my journal. I have questions that I'm asking God. God, what about this? What is this? And it allows me, sometimes I have an idea about something, allows me to see and then submit it and say, God, I don't necessarily understand this, but I trust you enough to obey you. That is a really important thing. If you're 13, that is a great thing to learn because you are going to be frustrated that you don't understand everything your parents are asking you to do. It is really important to learn how to live at the speed of your relationship where you trust even when you don't understand. It's important. And then number four, and this may be the most helpful thing to me, is it helps me see that I'm actually being transformed. Thank God I am not the same person I was 15 years ago. Y'all are beneficiaries of that. Beneficiaries of that. You would not want to go to the church of the guy who pastored 15 years ago. Because God is changing me. But you know how hard it is to see how you're changing? You know how hard that is? I mean, it's like when I was a kid growing up, I was 5'3", my junior year of high school, get my driver's license, 5'3", 92 pounds, ridiculous. I wanted nothing more than to be 6'5". I'm like looking at every look in the mirror. Am I growing? You can't see, but looking in a full-length mirror, you look the same. So my mom said, honey, come here. Most people doing this are like 7 or 8. My mom did this when I was like 15 and 16. She puts you up against the door frame and she puts a little tick mark, right? And you look and you go, oh my gosh, it's like a millimeter, a centimeter. You're like, yes, I'm growing. It gives you just enough to keep going. And you look back after a year and you see all these little, you're like, I was this tall, now I'm this tall. And then I was this tall, now I'm this tall. And it gives you a little bit of confidence. I look back at my journals and go, oh my gosh, this is what I struggle with. This is what I was thinking 5 years ago. This is what I was so consumed with. And now look at what God has done. It's either dissolved or I don't even think about it anymore. I use initials in my journal when I have issues with people. There are people I had issues with 10 years ago. I can't even remember what the initials stand for anymore. Isn't that a good thing? I used to hate you. I don't even remember that anymore. It's just gone. I prayed about it. I mean, think about this. There are so many things that God does in our lives. And the only reason that we don't see it is because we can't remember it. And so I choose to write it down so I can see that there are things that I used to be that I am not anymore. Do you know how many people are victims to what they used to be and they think they still are that because they don't have any way to really see your process? That's what I'm talking about. So here's what we're going to do. This is your homework. And if you have your pen, you can do this. I've kind of written this out so you can see it. So this is your week. And you're going to go and you're going to say 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27. That's Madison's birthday. My daughter's birthday is the 27th. So I'll go, Maddie's B-Day. And I'll write that down. So don't forget. This is October, by the way. So on Monday, I want you to write down Romans. And you can take a picture of this later. We'll post it up on Instagram so you can see this. Romans chapter 10, verses 9 through 13. Tuesday, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 5 through 12. On Wednesday, John chapter 1, verses 16 through 18. On Thursday, Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20. And then on Friday, John chapter 13, verses 12 through 17. Now, if you did that, guess what you have? You have a plan. Just like that, you have a plan. How easy was that? Every day, Saturday and Sunday, 27, 28. Saturday and Sunday, you can do whatever you want. You don't have to do anything. If you get 4 out of these 5, and you do that for the next 72 days, you will be absolutely astounded at what you see. All these verses that I just gave you correspond to devotions this week. So you'll open up PC3 or portcitychurch.org, your location. Go to the daily devotions. It'll have Romans 10 written out for you. You'll read it. It will give you a little story. It will give you a couple of questions. And you can write your thoughts on those questions on this blank piece, blank side right here. It's got a little prayer. It will help you process the scriptures. The bet is if you read these verses all next week, when you come next week, you'll probably hear some of this. Next week, you go, oh my gosh, I think I know what he's talking about. It'll be pretty awesome. So that's what we're going to do. I want for you to understand that you have to arrange your life in order to keep his word. He has given us a lot of latitude in how we do that. I'm just suggesting that we do it this way and we do it together. So bring your planner next week, bring your pen next week. We're going to do this for the next, till the end of this year. And so if you hate this, your only choice is not to come back, because we're going to keep doing this. I've committed to it, so we're going to do it. All right, fair enough? All right, let's pray. God, thank you so much. I ask that you would use this as a tool to help us see. God, I want for us to see your work. I want for us to encounter you. God, that you would use this as a way to help us do that, that we would be so confident as we get to the end of this year in your faithfulness to us, that we would do anything in the future because of how faithful you have been. God, I pray that you would use this as a tool to give us that view. And I ask your help. I ask you to meet us in this process together as your church, that we would individually see this, but God, corporately, together, we would sense your purposes, and that every one would be accomplished for your glory. And I pray this in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.